I want you to imagine this massive, almost dizzying geographical and, well, cultural
Oh,
whiplash.
that's a great way to describe it.
Right. Because picture an artist locked away in a studio in Whittier, California, and they're painstakingly working on this tiny, like, 15-inch watercolor painting.
A really intimate scale, yeah.
Exactly. Very small. And he's painting a mixed breed street dog, just standing quietly on a wooden balcony. But this balcony, it's not in California.
No, not at all.
No, it depicts a palafito, which is a stilt house environment thousands of miles away in the Ciénaga Grande in Colombia.
Which is this incredibly delicate, very vulnerable ecosystem where entire communities literally build their homes directly over the water.
Right, and the artist is looking at web references, just trying to bring this incredibly distant, intimate scene to life. And then fast forward just 1 year.
The journey it takes is wild.
It really is, because that same 15-inch piece of paper travels across the globe to be exhibited in a hyper-modern luxury art gallery in Dubai.
Yeah, and the trajectory itself is a fascinating piece of the story.
Definitely.
I mean, moving a quiet, unassuming scene of a Colombian stilt house from a studio in California straight into the opulence of the United Arab Emirates. It requires an artwork to have a profound universal resonance to survive that journey.
Okay, let's unpack this, because this journey and the artwork itself are really what we're focusing on for today's deep dive.
Yes, absolutely.
We're looking at a watercolor piece by the artist Cheiro Duque, titled "También Yo," which translates to "Me Too" from his Ciénaga Grande series.
It's a stunning piece of work.
It is. And our mission today isn't to just do like a superficial art critique. We're going to look closely at Duque's technical notes and the deep analysis provided in our sources to understand a very specific translation.
Right, how the physical becomes the conceptual.
Exactly. We want to see how purely physical, tangible choices in the studio, things as rudimentary as the thickness of the paper or, the ratio of water to pigment, can actually build a complex ethical argument about how you and I coexist.
And who we choose to ignore in our daily
Yes,
lives.
exactly.
Well, the hardest bridge to cross in visual art is taking highly tangible materials, pigments, water, cellulose, and using them to construct a completely intangible ethical idea inside the mind of the viewer.
It's basically magic when it works.
It really is. When an artist successfully validates invisible social forces through purely physical means, it requires just an obsessive level of control over the medium.
So we have to start at the physical foundation of this piece to understand how he pulls that off.
Yeah.
Because the medium is literally the bedrock of the method here.
Absolutely.
The source notes that this piece uses Daniel Smith watercolors. But the truly striking detail to me is the canvas itself.
A paper choice is wild.
Yeah, Duque used Arches paper, specifically 640-gram cold-pressed rough-grain paper.
Which is heavy, very heavy.
Right, because we know standard watercolor paper sits around, what, 300 grams?
Usually, yeah, around 300.
So jumping to 640 grams means he is essentially painting on heavy, rigid cardboard.
Pretty much, yeah.
And using something that industrial and, like, uncompromising for a medium as delicate and fluid as watercolor seems, on the surface, like a massive contradiction.
I mean, why does a delicate medium need that kind of industrial-sounding paper? Is it just overkill?
That's exactly what I was wondering.
What's fascinating here is that it's an absolute structural necessity for the emotional weight Duke wants to convey. Water is actually a highly destructive force when applied to paper.
Oh, for sure.
When you paint with watercolors on standard 300-gram paper and apply heavy washes, the cellulose fibers expand unevenly.
The paper warps.
Exactly. It buckles, it ripples, and that physical distortion changes how light hits the surface, which completely ruins the illusion of depth.
And Duque's entire technique for this piece relies really heavily on a process called veladuris, right? Like transparent glazes.
Yes, he is soaking the surface repeatedly.
He's laying down massive amounts of water, layering very sheer, transparent washes of pigment over and over again to build up the atmosphere.
Right, and with 640-gram paper, he can subject the canvas to that extreme volume of water, and the paper remains perfectly flat. It's resolute.
It absorbs the moisture without flinching.
Exactly, which allows the water to do the work rather than the brush. Because of those heavy water glazes, Duke is able to completely dissolve hard geometric lines.
So they just sort of melt.
Yeah, the sky, the brackish water of the lagoon, and the weathered wooden planks of the houses, they all start to melt into one another. There are no sharp boundaries.
It creates this visual illusion, where the architecture itself appears to be suspended, almost floating in a hazy, humid atmosphere.
The houses feel like they're hovering, lacking any solid anchor.
Right. And the literal density of the water on the paper is what communicates the emotional reality of the people living there.
It's a brilliant connection.
The analysis defines this visual suspension as creating a psychological state of precariousness and constant adaptation.
Which is the exact daily reality of a Palafito ecosystem like the Cienaga Grande.
Because human life there isn't built on solid, immovable bedrock. It is a life governed by tides, weather, and fragile wooden stilts driven into the mud.
Life is forced to constantly adapt to the fluid, sometimes threatening nature of water.
And the technique itself, heavy water dissolving boundaries on an immovable surface, it mirrors that fragile ecosystem perfectly.
The physical precariousness of the paint on the paper basically becomes the emotional precariousness of the subject.
Wow, yeah.
And because the environment is so vast and potentially overwhelming, Duke has to make a very calculated choice about where he places the viewer within this space.
Right, because the Cienaga Grande is a massive estuarine lagoon.
It's huge. If he wanted to simply document the precariousness, he could have painted a wide panoramic shot of the village from a distant boat.
Like a drone shot.
Exactly. Or an aerial view showing the tiny houses getting swallowed by the vastness of the water.
But we aren't looking at these stilt houses from a disconnected, objective distance. The framing technique Duke uses places you, the viewer, firmly inside an open interior.
We are standing inside a wooden refuge.
Yeah, we can see the vertical wooden columns, the roof supports, the uneven floorboards right under our feet. We're sharing the shadows of the house, looking outward at the bright, vast water.
It's incredibly grounding.
You know, when I was reading this part of the source material, it reminded me of sitting inside a zipped-up tent during a massive rainstorm in the woods.
Oh, let's explore that psychological shift, because the architecture of the tent completely changes your relationship with the environment.
Right, because if you are caught outside in the middle of a storm, you are in full defense mode.
Absolutely.
Your shoulders are hunched, you're squinting, your adrenaline is pumping just to survive the elements. You have zero capacity to appreciate the complexity or the beauty of the rain because nature is a threat.
It's just survival.
Exactly. But if you're sitting inside a dry tent and you unzip the canvas flap just enough to look outside, your survival instincts drop entirely.
You feel sheltered.
Yes. And because you feel safe, you suddenly become acutely aware of your own smallness. You can actually watch the storm and empathize with the vastness of nature simply because the architecture of the tent is acting as a barrier between you and the chaos.
That is a perfect analogy. That wooden balcony acts as the exact same psychological shelter for the viewer.
It brings your guard down.
By pulling you inside the shadows and removing your defensive instincts against the vastness of the lagoon, the architecture forces you to slow down.
You aren't bracing against the precarious environment. You're safely observing it.
And this framing is a deliberate manipulation of human empathy. We struggle to empathize when we feel threatened or overwhelmed.
Of course.
By providing a safe vantage point, the artist opens up our capacity to feel for the environment rather than just objectively observe it.
And the color palette really reinforces that emotional state, too. The notes describe a very muted, earthy color scheme.
There are no loud shouting colors.
Right. No aggressive neon contrast demanding your immediate attention. The constrained palette lowers your pulse.
It does.
It prepares your mind to deeply engage with the quiet details of the environment, the subtle textures and lives you'd normally completely ignore if you were in survival mode or looking from a disconnected academic distance.
It creates a visual silence. And in that silence, once your defenses are down and you're standing in that quiet, sheltered wooden interior looking out, your eye searches for an anchor.
And that's when you finally notice it.
Yes. You finally notice the true focal point of the entire painting.
Which isn't the water.
No, it's not the vast water or the complex architecture. It is a small, completely silent street dog standing on the balcony looking out at the same view you are.
The dog is the quiet protagonist of the whole piece.
Exactly.
But Duke's stated primary goal with this series is to give marginalized figures, like this forgotten street dog, in a precarious environment, a legitimate presence.
He wants to elevate those who are normally ignored or stepped over.
Right. So let me play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
If that is the core ethical goal, hiding a tiny dog in the shadows of the background seems, well, totally counterintuitive.
It does seem that way at first glance.
I mean, if an artist wants us to recognize a marginalized subject, the standard approach is to paint that subject huge, right in the foreground, taking up half the paper, so it absolutely cannot be ignored.
Yeah, because in our society, we usually equate importance with size, volume, and centrality.
Right, whoever's loudest wins.
Exactly. If something matters, we make it the biggest, loudest thing in the room. We put it on a pedestal. But Duke is rejecting that entire framework of dominance.
Which is fascinating.
If he had painted the dog massive, dominating the frame and dwarfing the architecture in the lagoon, he would have just created a new visual dictatorship.
A visual dictatorship. Wow. That perfectly describes the standard anthropocentric worldview, where human structures or chosen subjects just dominate the landscape.
Right. And if you simply invert that power dynamic and make the marginalized animal dominate the human structures in the landscape, you haven't actually solved the underlying problem of dominance.
You've just flipped the hierarchy.
Yes. Someone is still shouting down someone else. Someone is still taking up all the oxygen in the room.
That makes so much sense.
By painting the dog small, pushed back into the composition, and completely proportionate to the vast water and the wooden architecture, Duke achieves an incredibly difficult philosophical concept, which is horizontal coexistence.
Horizontal coexistence. I love that. You know, the more I stared at the image of this tiny dog, the more it reminded me of like the bass line in a classic jazz song.
Oh, I love a good jazz analogy.
Well, think about it. The bass player rarely gets the explosive screaming solo.
True.
They don't demand the frantic applause that the saxophone or the trumpet commands. The bass is just hanging out in the background, subtly keeping the pulse, dictating the harmonic structure.
Just holding it all together.
Exactly. But if you take that bass line away, the entire song completely falls apart. It loses its soul and its grounding. The bass line belongs there entirely, and it dictates the reality of the song, even though it never shouts for your attention.
That is spot on. And the text actually describes this specific dynamic as belonging without being the protagonist.
Belonging without being the protagonist.
Yes. Horizontal coexistence means that nobody is placed above anyone else in the visual hierarchy.
Everyone just is.
Exactly. The vast, powerful lagoon, the human-built architecture, the little street dog, they all share the exact same plane of importance.
It visually proves that all life forms in an environment deserve equal attention and respect.
You do not have to be the loudest, biggest thing in the room to prove that you have a fundamental right to exist.
The dog's quiet presence, just existing in this space alongside the viewer, is really where its power lies.
It is.
Now, you'd assume an artist who manages to capture horizontal coexistence so perfectly on a small piece of paper might just, you know, step back, drop the paintbrush, and consider the masterpiece complete.
You would think so.
But the sources we're looking at give us this really raw, vulnerable look at Duke's post-completion process. We get to see his autocritique.
It is such a rare insight into an artist's lingering insecurities about a finished, exhibited piece.
Yeah, it really is. And the autocritique reveals the exact mechanism of his subtle storytelling.
Even after the painting was done and hanging on a wall, Duke felt he could have improved it.
He couldn't let it go.
No, he specifically agonized over the dog's tonal contrast. He wrote that he wished he had added a more precise, luminous accent to the dog because he was worried the dog's silhouette was getting a little too lost in the shadows of the wooden balcony.
He wanted a balance where the dog didn't shout, but still spoke clearly.
Right.
It's like he wanted the dog to whisper, but he wanted to make absolutely sure the whisper had perfect pronunciation so the listener wouldn't strain to hear it.
That's a beautiful way to phrase it. He was trying to find the exact milligram of contrast that would maintain the serenity of the piece while ensuring the dog's visibility wasn't compromised by the shadows.
And his self-critique went beyond just the dog.
Yeah, it did. He also noted that, in hindsight, he would have simplified the geometric lines of the wooden boards and the roof supports on the balcony.
At first, tweaking the number of lines on a floorboard seems like a minor, almost obsessive architectural detail.
It sounds so pedantic.
Right. But simplifying those lines is actually about reducing visual noise. If you smooth out the background static and remove unnecessary geometry, the silence of the scene can actually be heard louder.
Exactly. And this level of self-critique showcases Duke's unique dedication to his craft. He isn't worried about the grand, sweeping, performative gestures.
He's agonizing over a millimeter of light on a dog's ear.
Or the visual friction of an extra wooden plank, yeah. Right. Because he understands that true empathy is built in those microscopic, quiet details.
When you're trying to communicate the value of a marginalized life, the subtleties basically carry the entire weight of the argument.
They absolutely do.
And it is precisely this obsessive refinement of a quiet, universal message that allowed this specific painting to make such a massive leap across the globe.
Yes, the journey.
Let's return to the timeline of this artwork's journey. The piece was painted in October 2022 in Whittier, California, by an artist interpreting web references of the Colombian Cienaga.
The cultural and geographic distance at the point of creation is already immense.
It's huge. But then, a year later, in November 2023, it is exhibited at the Artboxy and Andakilova Gallery in Dubai.
And the contrast in physical realities there is just staggering.
Oh, completely.
I mean, Dubai is essentially a monument to human dominance over nature. It is a hyper-modern, opulent desert metropolis known for glass skyscrapers, artificial islands, and unimaginable wealth.
And the Cienaga Grande is the exact opposite.
Completely. It is about human submission to nature, building weathered wooden houses on precarious stilts, and constantly adapting to the rising tides.
So you are taking an artwork depicting highly precarious, impoverished wooden houses suspended over brackish water, and you're showcasing it to an audience surrounded by steel, glass, and extreme luxury.
Right.
Initially, you might assume that an audience in Dubai would have absolutely no connection to a wooden stilt house in Colombia. The cultural distance seems just way too great for the artwork to resonate.
Yet it does resonate. And it resonates because cultural distance only affects the surface aesthetics, not the underlying emotional core.
Right.
The painting proves that the desire for a safe refuge, the feeling of sitting in that protective tent you mentioned earlier, the acute awareness of the vulnerability of life, and the ethical need to recognize the marginalized other. Well, those aren't local folklore.
No, they're not tied to a specific postal code or a tax bracket.
Exactly. These are universal human languages. They transcend geography, they transcend wealth, and they transcend cultural differences entirely.
Whether you are living in a precarious palafito over a lagoon, or looking out from a penthouse in a desert metropolis, the fundamental human need to belong, to feel safe from the storm, and to coexist with the life around you is identical.
It's a shared human condition.
And Duke's mastery of subtlety, his ability to manage water density and architectural framing it, allows a 15-inch piece of paper to speak that universal language fluently to anyone, anywhere.
It really is a remarkable synthesis of technique and philosophy.
Yeah.
The heavy paper allows for the precarious water. The precarious water necessitates the architectural shelter. The shelter allows for empathy. And that empathy is directed toward a quiet, horizontal coexistence with a street dog.
We have covered incredible ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at how the literal weight of 640-gram watercolor paper allowed the artist to use massive amounts of water without warping the physical reality of the scene.
Right.
We explored how being placed inside a protective, wooden architectural perspective lowers our defenses, allowing us to truly see what is in front of us without feeling threatened.
Lowering those survival instincts.
Exactly. And we learned how a tiny, quiet dog acting as a visual baseline teaches us the profound value of horizontal coexistence, proving you don't have to shout or dominate a space to belong in it.
When describing the painting's perspective on this vulnerable environment, the source text offers a defining summary of Duke's approach. It states that the artwork neither denounces nor idealizes, it simply recognizes.
Neither denounces nor idealizes, it simply recognizes. That concept of simple recognition is incredibly powerful, especially when you apply it to our daily lives.
Oh, absolutely.
Because our modern world often feels trapped in a polarized pendulum.
It does.
On one side, we are toxically denouncing everything. You open social media, and everyone is furiously screaming about what is wrong, pointing out the flaws, creating endless conflict, and demanding that their viewpoint dominates the space.
Exhausting.
It is. But then the pendulum swings to the exact opposite extreme. We use digital filters to create romanticized, hyper-idealized fantasies of our lives, completely erasing any trace of vulnerability, precariousness, or reality.
We constantly toggle between outrage and illusion, leaving no room for reality.
Exactly. And this painting asks a radical question. What if we stopped doing both?
Just stepped off the pendulum.
Yeah. What if we just paused, dropped our defenses like we're stepping into that wooden refuge, and simply recognize the reality of our environments and the living beings in them exactly as they are?
No filters, no outrage.
Just quiet validation of their existence.
This raises an important question that builds directly on Duke's philosophy of coexistence.
What's that?
Well, next time you walk into a crowded room, an office, a family gathering, or any new environment, just take a second and look around. Who is the quiet dog on the balcony in that space?
Oh, I would have loved that.
Who is the person lingering in the shadows, not demanding attention, but fundamentally belonging there?
Right.
And more importantly, how does your mere presence in that space affect them? Are you creating a visual dictatorship that overshadows them? Or are you actively, silently validating their right to exist alongside you on the exact same plane of importance?
That is the exact challenge we want to leave you with today. As you move through your week, try to observe the world with that level of quiet, horizontal validation.
It takes practice.
It does. But it turns out you don't need a heavy piece of Arches watercolor paper or a luxury gallery in Dubai to practice the art of simply recognizing someone else. You just have to be willing to look.
Very well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.